Any questions from anyone? Yes.
Recently, I met a friend who was a Buddhist like for 8 years, and now she lost her faith, and we talked to her, we talked to each other, and she was saying that so most the questions that they had, how, for example, teachers in Buddhism and in our mind also maybe they have so many. Disciples, and most of the time, you know, talking to them and not seeing them, so they just gave initiation, and the disciples sometimes took years. So your questions was like, how can we like how teachers can take so many people and be responsible for them, and also.
Organized religion.
Yeah, organized religion.
Yes.
Because it's just made for, you know, to make people be like a group, but not for you. So I couldn't find a response to this, and just I want you to talk about this.
Yeah, well, there, you know, formal aspects and things that are substantial. So Srila Guru Maharaj, he would very often frame things that, in this way, form and substance. Right? And this is a theme, it's an axiomatic truth, it's a universal theme. Form and substance. when it's applied to religion, or any many other things, but religion, he would say things like, a religious institution is formed to promote a particular ideal. Right? The whole idea is that it will promote a particular level of theism, a particular ideal. If in time it becomes absent, that ideal, then it's a shell of what it was meant to be. And this happens necessarily. We shouldn't be afraid to identify this. When I was first reading the Bhagavad Gita as a teenager, and I came to the fourth chapter, what is the famous, you know, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avayam manur ikshvakave bravit. I forget. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshyo vidu sa kalaneha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. So, what I found of peculiar interest was that here Krishna is recognizing that in time, due to the influence of time, the original spiritual substance may become modified beyond recognition. It may become so distorted, modify is the word, distortion, perverted, many different words could be applied to this, that what it was originally, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his Bhagavat, the truth is inevitably converted into error. This is also dealt with in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And what I mean by making these references, I didn't find it discouraging. I found it encouraging that this was being acknowledged and recognized, as opposed to saying, oh, this can never happen. that would make me suspicious. But here, from the beginning, it was being acknowledged. He's saying, why am I speaking this again to Arjuna? What it was long ago, it's become modified beyond recognition. Or another way of putting it, religion has deteriorated into irreligion, if you want to use religious terms. Or Bhaktivinoda's more broad encompassing, the truth has been converted into error. Right. So even secular thinkers, they recognize this. Sometimes in the literary world, literary, philosophical, linguistics, they use the word cant. And here, cant means, it's not like the word cannot. Cant here means almost like chant. It means mindless repetition of formula. When something descends to the point where it becomes the mindless repetition of formula. Guru Maharaj himself, another one of his original sutras was, the repetition of sensation is not experience. Then we go, why are we chanting? Over and over again. Well, factor this in. The repetition of sensation is not experience. Simply by saying the same thing over and over again, whether it's a mantra, a concept, an idea, a prayer, whatever it is not experience. It's not necessarily experience. He also heard in his childhood, avritir sarva shastranam bodhadapi gariyasi. The peculiar, and you might think it odd to inject this at this point, the Vedic aphorism that says, it's not as important as to understand as to go on hearing. He said, well, isn't that a contradiction of what you just said? Not necessarily. Depends what type of hearing that is. Vikriditam bhajabhidu biritam jibishnu shvadhan vito anushranaya dattavarnayedya. There's also a faithful type of hearing, of repeated hearing, faithfully, that's not mindless repetition. So we have to be on guard against complacency, where something can descend into cant, can descend into formula, or, you know, platitude. At the same time, we'll remember, whatever platitudes, cliches, sayings there are, they are what they are because there was a time when they were meaningful and substantial. So, what it points to is that we need something living beyond the mechanics of it all. We need something living and vital. And Krishna's parting instructions to Uddhava in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also mentioned there. It's along the lines of kalo nashta dushamesha, the same kind of thing. I forget the exact words in Sanskrit. But there are two things are mentioned significantly, which are paramparjena and prakriti vaichitrat. And what this means is when there's the dissemination of spiritual knowledge, as in this case, Brahma, and his sons and disciples. What is that, us?
Oh,
it's a bird. The bird of agreement. This is an exotic place, no doubt. So he's speaking this truth, what do you want to call it, giving the mantra, the concept, the idea, the notion. And Guru Maharaj says, prakriti vaichitra means according to the nature or the tendency of the receivers, it undergoes some modification. then they in turn represent that to another group who hear what they're saying. According to their nature and tendency, it undergoes some modification. And in this way, it's possible that it can get so far away from what it was originally that the truth is converted into error. So, that's really a bird. Okay. Anyway, that...
turn it off.
Yeah, turn that bird off. Because that bird is engaged in the mindless repetition of formula. But another bird we revere, Sukh, as it like Sukadeva Goswami, the Sukh, the parrot, we're told that tastes the fruit becomes sweeter. So there, now we can go in the opposite direction. Nigama kalpataro galitam palam shukamukaram ritradavasamritam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavuka. And this is the Prayojan Tattva Slok of Bhagavatam, because we have Sambandha and Janmadyasya Yataha Abideya Dharmak Prochitakaita Botra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. And the Prayojan Tattva Slok, where the goal, the target, the fruit, Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam, Vedanta as a tree, Vedas as a tree produce the flower Vedanta, from which the fruit Vedanta Shruti Saram, Vedanta Saram, the creme de la creme of all spiritual sound and substance, manifest in the form and expression of Srimad Bhagavatam, culminating in the divine pastimes of Srimati Radharani, the Braja Gopis, and Krishna in Vrindavan. So, but here we have Shukamukaram Ritradavashamyatam. Vyasa is saying, after this was tasted by Sukadev, it didn't become tasteless. It didn't, it wasn't like when someone sucks out all the flavor, the juice from something, chewing the chewed. Like a piece of gum that's lost all of its sweetness because someone chewed everything out of it, and what's left is just some tasteless, vile pulp. No, he's saying here something miraculous is taking place. By Sukadev's tasting this nectarine substance, it's become enhanced. It's become even more tasteful. That's also possible. And that's where we set our target. That possibility should pique the imagination. There's something by someone delivers something tasteful, you relish that tasteful something, and it becomes even more tasteful. Is there something like that? That's another approach to this, and actually that's the answer to this question. Srila Guru Maharaj deals with this also. This is Bhaktivinod Virahadasakam. Said, Sri Gauranamatam Srupabiditam Rupagre Gurjainadritam Rupadye Puriveshitam Raghu Ganai Ashraditam Shavitam. As Gurudev like to say, what is Mahaprabhu's tasting matter? That's known fully to Srup Damodar. Mahaprabhu Ditya Kalevar, Mahaprabhu the second, Mahaprabhu's other self. Swarup Bandar, he's the Mahabhav Krishna Prem Bandar, the storehouse of this sort of divine nectarine treasure. But it's worshipped by Sanatana Goswami and extended by Rupa Goswami and his fathers, and Jivadya. Rupa Grajena Adritam Rupa Dye Puriveshitam Raghu Ganai Ashraditam Shavitam. Raghunathas Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, they're tasting this. What came from Srup Damodar, worshipped by Sanatan, extended by Rupa, they're tasting that substance, and it's becoming enhanced in the process. That's what we're interested in. Something living, dynamic, that has possibility for growth and development. And Srila Guru Maharaj, on the guru-disciple side of things, said his preference was to, in a small circle, deal with higher subject matters. So you can say a few disciples, following the advice of Rupa Goswami, where he says, don't have many disciples, read many books, don't read many books, have many followers, and open many temples, mats, centers. So Srila Guru Maharaj, acquainted with that teaching of Rupa, said to Srila Saraswati Thakur, we know he could always present everything very tactfully, gently. He said, what if someone was to say that we're violating this principle by initiating so many disciples, establishing so many centers, particularly? And he said, Saraswati Thakur's response was, simple, like in a phrase, in a sentence he dealt with. He said, according to one's capacity. And Guru Maharaj's own example was, he said, one man, like a general in the army, he's controlling a million soldiers, and he has free time on his hands. He said, another man has a wife and a child and can't find a moment to himself. He said, so it's according to individual capacity. But whenever this issue came to Srila Guru Maharaj, well, he gave one example too, in the time of Gaudiya Math. They were on the Brajamandal Parikrama with so many pilgrims. And there's, you know, logistics involved in making arrangements for everybody. Where they'll stay, the cooking, the lodging, etc. And at some point, because they'll stay in one holy place, then you have to have advance party, move the group there. The logistics broke down. And then there was dissent amongst the pilgrims. And that news of their dissent came to the ear of Saraswati Thakur, and he deputed Bhakti Hriday Ban Maharaj to calm them. And Srila Guru Maharaj said, Ban Maharaj told them, he said, you didn't come to us and join with us because we have some superior system of management. Right? As one devotee said with regard to some of the modern day manifestations of the Krishna consciousness movement, he said, no one can accuse us of being organized religion. Like disorganized religion. So he said, you didn't come to us because we have a superior system of management, people skills, and all these things. But you were attracted by the dignity of the conception. And on the basis of your affinity for that, you please don't mind it, you know, tolerate the lack of organization, the disorganization. Srila Guru Maharaj mentioned in his own regard. We now, when we go to India, we see so many beautiful temples and the like. But when Srila Guru Maharaj joined, they didn't have any in Gaudiya Math. They're in the process of building some. He said, I was not attracted by the architecture, but by the dignity of the conception of Srila Saraswati Thakur. So, and then later it evolved into a grand, expansive institution, organization. So, we're looking for spiritual substance, not a particular system of dissemination. Yes, it is advised by Rupa, no less than Rupa Goswami, to have a few disciples, not to read so many books just for the sake of impressing the audience, trying to understand the essence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Barabahi and Saragrahi. Barabahi means like an ass, a beast of burden. He can carry so much. He said, so carrying the weight of having read so many books without understanding the essence, the gist of what was to be extracted from there. And that type of scholarship is a burden and is, if a devotee, their purpose in reading many books is to impress their audience, then the transaction will be something less than genuinely spiritual. Like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, we hear that in his, we know he was an avadut. Bhakta avadutta murtaye means beyond rules, regulations, appearing almost as a mad urchin, but revered by people nonetheless as being a substantial saint, Vaishnava. So one man who made his living reading the Bhagavatam, a professional reciter, wanted to read before Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Babaji Maharaj tried to avoid somehow, couldn't avoid the situation. And afterwards, people were asking him for his impressions. And he said, get some cow dung and some cow urine and cleanse this place. And everyone was shocked because they're familiar with statements in the Bhagavatam itself that says, wherever the Bhagavatam is spoken, the speaker is purified, the listener is purified, who asked the question, everyone is, the very place itself is purified. And Babaji Maharaj is saying, at the conclusion of this Bhagavatam recitation, to get cow dung and cow urine, which is the Vedic system for purifying that which has become contaminated. So everyone was puzzled and bewildered. He said, but Babaji Maharaj, we just heard the Bhagavatam. He said, you heard Bhagavatam. He said, all I heard was money, money, money. So the man literally spoke the contents of the pages of the Bhagavatam. But it was a shell for someone substantial like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj there. It was absent divine substance. There was no spiritual current running through the words. And therefore, not purifying, but contaminating. So it brings us back to the original concept. What qualifies a transaction as being spiritual? Form versus substance. So from a Krishna conscious perspective, there has to be the will of Krishna in the background to distribute himself. Il nayam atma pravatanena labhyo namedaya na bahuna shrutena tame vaisha vrinute tena labhyas tashaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam. Famous verse from the Upanishad. Nayam atma pravatan means talking, lecturing, preaching. Namedaya means intelligence. Bahuna, having heard so much, back to Rupa Goswami, not just hearing extensively to expand the repertoire of impressing a relatively naive or inexperienced audience. Na bahuna shrutena. It says, he reveals himself to whom he chooses, through whom he chooses. In some instances, that may be one or a few. Right? Nartham Thakur's guru, Lokanath Goswami, vowed not to take any disciple, but by the devotion, the affection, sincerity of Nartham Thakur, he was accepted. So Lokanath Goswami had one disciple. Nartham Thakur preached extensively around India. Sometimes we had 100,000 disciples. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, not making any disciples, but one exception, Srila Saraswati Thakur. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj has one disciple, Saraswati Thakur, thousands. Back to his premise, according to capacity. So we can't avoid becoming acquainted with spiritual substance so that we can recognize it, whether it's coming in a apparently narrow channel or something very wide and broad. That's not our concern, narrow or broad, but it's quality. What is the quality of that substance? Any other question? One of Srila Guru Maharaj's examples is about the Ganga. What is the Ganga? It's the current. And he gives the common understanding. Sometimes there's what is taken. We know we were just in India, and you go to one place and say, is this the Ganga? And they'll say, oh, and they'll give some other name, or it's another river, or there's a particular place where they meet, the confluence of the Ganga, the Jalangi, the Saraswati, Jamuna. So they'll say, when the current of another river enters the current of the Ganga, it's Ganga. When the current of the Ganga leaves that current and enters the current of another river, it's no longer Ganga. So the common understanding, then what is Ganga? It's the undercurrent, the current. So that's what we're looking for, that divine current, where it is flowing. It is a current that is vital to our existence, spiritually and otherwise. Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karunamrita Karunamrita Vahini. Gopal Bhatta Goswami says, this divine current that is flowing from Srimati Radharani, Vrindavan. Radhe Vrindavanadishe Kornamrita Vahini. Sevan Mukhehi Javaro Shayame Raspurtada. Current of service. All these lights, we have so many lights here. The apparatus, everything can look very impressive. But if you take away the electric current, it's only a shell of what it's meant to be. It's not realizing its potential. The potential of all these lights to give illumination. But without electrical current, there's no illumination. Atakshi Krishna Namari Nabhavyed Grahyam Indriye. That current is beyond the senses, the mind, and the intellect. Spiritual current, seva. And when they're connected to the source and infused with that current, then there's illumination, shayameva spurtada. Small light, big light, voltage. Srila Guru Maharaj has pointed out, hey, we may vibrate the name Krishna, others may vibrate the name Krishna. He said, but when Srimati Radharani vibrates the name Krishna, what type of voltage is in that current? So, revealed in the beginning of Charitamritam is Krishna saying, when she, what is her position? When she's cursing me, that curse is sweeter than the sound of the Vedas personified and their extraordinary glorification. How they're telling how wonderful and glorious is Krishna, divine. And Krishna revealing, he's expressing himself candidly, when Radharani is cursing me, that's sweeter than the sound of the Vedas and steals my mind away from the reverential hymns of the Vedas. Is this a question?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Speak up for the sake of our listeners.
Shyam was asking about this topic, form and substance. If we see some person and form, it's just a person, but if it's Vaishnava, what's the most important quality of Vaishnava and what that differs him from other?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. What distinguishes a Vaishnava? What comes first to my mind is Srila Guru Maharaj saying, we can recognize a Vaishnava as someone who's got recognition from a Vaishnava. So just as Srila Guru Maharaj in his Bhaktivinoda Viraha Dasakam, not that his disciples are praising that, as they are, but because someone won't be judged according to the loving angle of vision of a disciple, but Saraswati Thakur is recognizing in him the current of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the current of Rupa Goswami. So that's an unparalleled level of recognition, right, from the most substantial source. Otherwise, the Bhagavatam comes to mind, yasyasti bhagavata kinchana, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana, sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura, harava bhakta sukato mahadguna, manoratena sato davato bahi. perhaps in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada liked to quote this verse where it says that a devotee, we see them, yasyasti bhakti or bhagavat akinchan, that they have no interest in the mundane. That's one aspect. Sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura. And we see divine-like qualities manifesting in them. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna. He said, whereas someone, a materialist, however developed they may seem to be in good qualities, mahadguna, mano ritenasato davato bahi, they're on the mental platform. Manorata means the chariot of the mind. So their good qualities are located in the mental plane. Whereas we could say, whereas their disqualification is more of a substantial nature. And the reverse we can consider in the case of a Vaishnava. But Vaishnavas are distinguished as those who are, they're wholly given over to Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnava. To their guru, they're totally absorbed in service and association through remembrance of the lotus feet of their guru and extending that connection to others. They're not self-promoting. We say kana kamini pratishta. They understand kanak, Lakshmi, money, Lakshmi is meant for Narayan. Kamini, ladies, for Krishna. Pratishta, name and fame, for Guru. Some. These are some things that we may consider. I think, what is it, 24, some 26 qualities mentioned by, maybe found in Charitamritam, quoting Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But, you know, that's a list. What are you going to do? Like, go with the list and, like, start checking, ticking off what you see on the list? When I say you, I mean you, plural. One. Who is wholly given over to Guru and the service of the lotus feet of Guru can infuse that feeling in others, within us. We'll be awakened to serving prospects, serving potential. Because if we're looking for a stereotype, we may be misled. Sometimes we're told the Vaishnava is as strong as a thunderbolt and soft as a rose. Srila Guru Maharaj said of Saraswati Thakur, he had the sweetness of Vrindavan within, and it could only be detected within. Whereas externally appeared in the form of a devastator. He's saying, so from an external point of view, like a thunderbolt, but internally, like a rose. So if we're looking for some stereotype, as I told in the 60s, when Maharishi Mahesh was very popular because the Beatles went to him and other movie stars, so he had his 15 minutes of fame before the on television in America. And whenever they would show him, he would always be dressed in flowing robes and holding a flower and laughing. So big long beard, flowing robes, holding flowers, and giggling. And talking about transcendental meditation. Something inside of me made me realize that he was the fool on the hill. Which is a song written about him, actually. Fool on the Hill. That was Paul McCartney's ultimate impression of him, the Fool on the Hill. John Lennon wrote another song about him called Sexy Sadie. Right? So in other words, he fit the stereotype of what a guru is, but the more they got to know him and interact with him, one said he's the fool on the hill, the other said Sexy Sadie. And something about him, his flower twirling, rubbed me the wrong way. Whereas when I went into the Haight-Ashbury Sri Sri Radha Krishna temple of Srila Prabhupada, and there was this picture of Prabhupada, and it's a very famous picture, black and white, taken by Gurudas Prabhu. Where Prabhupada's sitting, he's sitting with his Java Mala taking Krishna Nam, and he looks so grave. And when I saw this picture, somehow I felt he's experiencing something very deep. And we could say, well, this is a superficial type of analysis. Yes, it is. Talking about stereotypes. But in time, I came to know by being his disciple, follower, interacting with him, that what I perceived initially was true. Substantial. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. By interacting with a Vaishnava, the Krishna conception should appear in our hearts in a meaningful, a substantial and meaningful way. Achinoti yashastartam. Until the charja, one who extracts the meaning of the scripture. Because there are so many books, so many scriptures, so many statements. How to harmonize all of them. How to extract from them something that's meaningful and relevant to our lives at present. But by interacting with substantial devotees, the tendency to feel some affection toward Krishna will awaken within us. Bhajaniya Sarvashad Guna Vishishta, and subsequently to offer ourselves in service. We hear the Vaishnavas, Kripam Buddhi Yat Paraduka Duki. Their suffering is observing the suffering of others. That bothers them, that disturbs them. So they want Nachatasman Manusheshu Kashtin Me Priyakritama. They want to take Krishna conception to as many others as possible. Because they know that all suffering is based, at its root is forgetfulness of one's relationship with Krishna. whatever the cause is locally, the ultimate cause of all suffering is forgetfulness of one's relationship with Krishna. Bhayam dhitiya vinivesitasya. That's another bird. We should invite them all.
No, this is lizard.
Oh, that's a lizard.
Yeah.
They do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that one. The tick-ticky or another lizard?
No, the big ones.
Oh, big ones, like iguanas? Or what kind of lizards are they? Really?
We heard
that in Thai
they call
it.
Anomaru
poetic. They say when they're doing like this, someone is telling the truth. So we have the tickies going, they're verifying, and then Good. We hope we're telling the truth. But really, interacting with the Vaishnava will awaken the tendency within us to appreciate Krishna. Yes.
Несут эту идею, смешивая ее с чем-то таким, что касается здоровья, своих социальных отношений в обществе. Ну, они как бы пытаются вот эту вот идею нести людям для того, чтобы эта идея несла именно пользу людям, для того, чтобы как-то ну, выровнять свою жизнь как на социальном мире. И существовало два мнения. Одно мнение говорило о том, что группа людей, которая занимается такой активностью, она является полезной, потому что ты можешь почерпнуть эту какую-то информацию, и ну, как бы, если тебя заинтересует что-то более высшее, идти дальше. Другое мнение заключало в том, что они не полезны, потому что они тебе дают часть усеченной информации, которая не касается чего-то, как служения, а она касается именно твоей пользы, и ты можешь уйти в сторону. Вот.
Служение. I understood that part.
There was a conversation today. They were discussing a group of people who is taking the knowledge from Vedas and also about Krishna consciousness, but they're using it to show people how to come to health way of life, healthy way.
Healthy?
Yes, for health, for
yes.
I don't know, for prosperity, for example. And they say that there were two opinions. One who were telling that this group of people were bringing this knowledge, some kind of wholesome for society, because still they are bringing the knowledge from Vedas. But the other opinion that these people, they are just diverting people from the right perspective,
yes.
from the right way.
Yes.
So,
we know the Bhagavatam, we mentioned these three slokas in the beginning. So I told about the third one. But in the second position is the Abhideya Tattva Sloka, Dharma Prochita Kaita Votra, Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. So it says, Dharma Praujita Kaitava. Saying here, religion, and it means Vedic religion, all these good things that the Vedas say about how to live your life, be in the mode of all these, you know, to gradually elevate yourself from the mode of ignorance to passion, to goodness, etc. Saying, here it's being told, Narada comes and chastises Vyas and said, you're doing a disservice to people. Because you're making them think, you're giving them a way where they think they can live in this world and be healthy. So they're never going to give it up. Why should they? So even though that's not what you meant, but you meant to take them to something beyond all of this, higher, more refined, liberating, etc., you've given them a program where they can stay bound perpetually in the name of following Vedavyas and religious prescription. So on the one hand, it's like Guru Maharaj sometimes would frame it this way: absolute consideration, relative consideration. We can say, from a relative position, it has some value. It will say, yes, if you reconfigure your life in such a way, like becoming a vegetarian, the practice of yoga, this, that, whatever it might be, you know, if you reconfigure your life and align it with Vedic concepts and principles, then you could establish yourself in a position that's most conducive to spiritual realization. But we find that very often that's not true, ironically. So sometimes the most difficult people for us to preach to are vegetarians and people who practice yoga. You would think, no, they should be the people who are most, but they're not. Why? Because they think they already got it. Because it's not just about being a vegetarian and being healthy. Right? So, you know, and it's oxymoronic to speak of being healthy in the world of mortality. You know, so yeah, I mean, you know, we're not knocking health. Everybody wants to be healthy. But let's face it, everybody's not. You know? And not only that, everybody is going to die despite the seductive lure of, you know, the carrot of technology and science. They're promising eternal life to people, which they say is the one of the foolish assertions of religious people talking about eternal life. So on the one hand, they're mocking this as being, you know, the target of a bunch of foolish people. And then what are they saying? What are they promising? Eternal life. Same thing. So that's because, I mean, the serious part of it is we all have to deal with mortality. Right? So, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha doshanu darshanam. Krishna says, this is the darshan of this world. The dukkha. This type of suffering associated with birth, death, old age, and disease. These things, even if you can be healthy, you know what's going to kill you is getting older. It's interesting, it's in the same list with birth, death, old age, and look, death, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. Between disease and death, they've put age. And you can say, well, why are they putting it on an equal, you know, in the same sequence as these things? Because, you know, it's hard, everyone in this room, with the exception of me, is young. I mean, look, the last thing I remember, I was 19. And then suddenly I was 59. I don't know what happened. Like, I celebrated my 19th birthday, and then I was 59. So, and it's more painful for someone who, you know, janmai swarja shruta shri bir edamana madakumang, someone who's famous in the world or beautiful, for them it's extremely painful. The supermodels of the world, the famous Hollywood actresses, because for a short time they can be the archetype of beauty, charm, and sweetness. But But it's so short-lived, right? You know, the average model, like a model is old by the time they're 24, right? Maybe it's like 17 to 24. The girl is 23 to 24. Well, she's pretty gotten pretty old now. She's 24 years old. She's had her day, right? As the poet Nash wrote in Litany in the Time of Plague, beauty is but a flower, wrinkles will devour, brightness falls from the air, queens have died young and fair. So it's... So trying to maintain an illusory representation of oneself is painful and self-defeating. And taking things from the Vedas, whether it's yoga or other kinds of things, and disseminating them to people so that in their desperation to delay the effects of aging and impending mortality, to give them some false hope that they can live here happily, indefinitely, is a type of deception. So there is some deception there. People like to cherry-pick the Vedas and Eastern thought for the parts they like and the parts that are least likely to be jarring or offend others. So it's a type of deception. As we know from our exposure to the teachings in Vedic literature that there's this balance there in Bhagavad Gita, and the theme of mortality is ever present. It's with a healthy understanding of that, not a morbid obsession, but a healthy recognition of its inevitability gives focus to your life, your activities. It helps one organize one's time. As Steve Jobs said, that finding out he was dying was very, you know, liberating to him, because he knew, all right, he didn't know the exact time, but all right, I have a limited amount of time. This is what I want to do in that time. So that's a Vedic concept, right? Is understanding the inevitability of mortality. We're living in the mortal world. You know, what do you call it? Memento mori. Reminders, death reminders. It's every day in the news. Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gacchanti, ajamalayam, shesha, stavra, ischante, kimascharja, aktakparam. We see it every single day. If we were to go to the homepage of any newspaper or magazine, news magazines in the world, this is the news. Right? Every day you'll see there will be someone famous who's died, or someone who's not famous who died, some sort of mortal tragedy. This is the news every single day. So for us to live in the denial that we'll somehow be exempt, it won't happen to us, and repeatedly we hear the people, when someone in a little small town somewhere, whether it's in France, America, Russia, it doesn't matter, where, and there's some tragic, violent death sometimes, and often, including children. And when they interview the people of that town, they say, nothing like that ever happens here. Right? That's that. You can always count on that. And about the man who did all this, he was quiet and kept to himself. In a town where nothing like this ever happens. But in a town where nothing like this ever happens, it happens. And I'm always suspicious of two types of people. People who smile all the time and people who are too quiet. That's my own person. I mean, that's not in the Vedas. Maybe some, we'll find some book. So, I said, not a morbid obsession. I'm gonna die, we're all gonna die. Not like that. But a, you know, healthy recognition of its inevitability. And that will help us organize our time. And we'll realize if I spend this much time sleeping, this much time engaged in bodily maintenance, if you factor it in, you'll realize I have a limited amount of time to devote to internal culture. Unless you're so good at internal culture that even when you're sleeping and doing bodily maintenance, it's also liberated activities, which is possible for someone highly evolved spiritually. But at least we can understand we have a limited amount of time for internal development, internal culture. Yes.
Very short question.
Yeah.
Вот на лекции там есть беседа между Кунсай Махараджи и Сунил Махараджи Шитару Махараджи. И в этот момент Шитару Махараджи объясняет, что есть один участок земли, который он бы хотел для них приобрести. Есть такое секретное место, которое было в том такое, где родился Махапрабху. И там он планировал установить маяк. Вот, ну, что с этим местом случилось, и кому он сейчас принадлежит, и почему ему не удалось его купить? Или удалось, я вот не знаю, дальнейшую историю.
He was listening to a lecture and there was a discussion between Shitar Maharaj, Sadhu Maharaj and Guru about some kind of place that Shitar Maharaj was going to buy or he was willing to buy it. It was discovered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This was the place of Mahaprabhu appearance. And Shitar Maharaj wanted to build there something.
Lighthouse.
Yes.
So he's asking.
Now Saraswati Thakur wanted to put a lighthouse there.
What happened to this place?
We don't know. I can just think of Guru Maharaj saying designed and destined. If it is the will of Mahaprabhu that it becomes apparent, manifest, recognized, designated, then that will happen. And otherwise not. Hare Krishna.